And now, a new Blog Talk
Radio.
He drops into the bottom of the ocean, without the mountains, and wherever this guy runs off to. A life well lived.
What I'm saying to you this morning, my friend, even if it falls your lot to be a street sweeper. Born out in sweep streets like Michelangelo painted pictures. Sweep streets like Handel and Beethoven composed music. Sweep streets like Shakespeare wrote poetry. Sweep streets so well that all the hosts of heaven and earth will have to pause and say, here lived a great street sweeper who swept his job well. If you can't be a pine on the top of the hill, be a scrub in the valley, but be the best little scrub on the side of the rill. Be a bush if you can't be a tree. If you can't be a highway, just be a trail. If you can't be the sun, be a star. It isn't by size that you win or you fail. Be the best of whatever you are. And when you do this, you've mastered the length of life. This onward push to the end of self-fulfillment is the end of a person's life. Now, don't stop here, though. You know, a lot of people get no further in life than the length. They develop their inner powers. They do their jobs well. Do you know they try to live as if nobody else lives in the world but themselves? And they use everybody as mere tools.
This is the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Movement tonight. We're praying for those that caught up in the storm down in New Orleans, those in New York, and those in New Jersey. We're praying. The Dr. King Movement today like to bring out some things that's happening. This is Labor Day, getting ready for labor. Dr. King always talked about it's all right to work. You need a job. And we've been going through some things. I want to say this. I want to thank you. The Gibson sisters, thank you. And I want to say it. When I crossed over to your ancestor, they told me something good. And I want to tell you, Mary, I know what's going on. I got a message from Bertha, and I will tell you and Pearl together. But tonight we're talking about the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. movement, and we're talking about the floods back-to-back, the storms back-to-back. They just cut off people. We have to do something better. They spend $6 trillion in Afghanistan for 20 years. Right now, our roads are caving in, our bridges are falling, and we don't have the money we need to buy a home. This government got to do better than it's doing towards its citizens. And I'm talking about black, white, brown, green, whatever. The racial situation have to change. Dr. King said that. I'm praying for those that are sick tonight, those that are caught up. There's no sorrow on earth that heaven cannot heal. And I want to share with you tonight for about 5 minutes, if I can. Team, verse 11 and 12. God brought special miracles by the hand of Paul. They brought handkerchiefs and aprons, and the sick was healed, and the evil diseases left them. I want to talk tonight about the evil diseases. The disease of cobra, the diseases of sickness, the diseases of mass murder, and diseases of hate and racism that's going through our community. Prayer changes thing. I was talking down in Greenwood, Mississippi. Sister Bailey, she was saying, Bishop, we need prayer. We need to understand the power of God and the power of what God's going to do. And doors going to open up. And I want to, going into this Labor Day, put the sleeping car porters and all of that work, God did everything, and we have come to this level. And I want to tell you, I'm praying for you. And don't forget, the war in Vietnam, in Afghanistan, for 20 years, what did they accomplish? And I want to talk about 9-1-1 is coming up. And I've been doing some investigation, told me that some of the Saudis was involved in aiding and betting the people that did the bombing on America. I want to say this. We're coming up to 9-1-1. Where was you at when 9-1-1 come? But this is what I want to say to you, that what's going on. Plane hit the tower in New York, and it melted the steel, and I just don't believe that it was more than that. It melted that whole floor, and diesel don't burn that fast. It was something else. So it's a loss of cover on that 9-1-1, and the truth have not been told yet. And I'm looking for the truth to come out, because 9-1-1, when the plane hit the tower, the steel just burned up. That means that something else went on. They're not telling the truth about that. But here's Dr. King, and going into this Labor Day.
We must also realize that the problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of political and economic power.
We read one day, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But if a man doesn't have a job or an income, he has neither life nor liberty and the possibility for the pursuit of happiness. He merely exists.
Estimated that we spend $322,000 for each enemy we kill in Vietnam, while we spend in the so-called war on poverty in America only about $53 for each person classified as poor.
The promises of the Great Society have been shot down on the battlefield of Vietnam, making the poor, white and Negro, bear the heaviest burdens both at the front and at home.
The other thing I want you to understand is this, that it didn't cost the nation one penny to integrate lunch counts. It didn't cost the nation one penny to guarantee the right to vote. But now we are dealing with issues that cannot be solved without the nation spending billions of dollars and undergoing a radical redistribution of economic power.
Yes.
All labor has dignity.
Yes.
But you are doing another thing. You are reminding not only Memphis, but you are reminding the nation that it is a crime for people to live in this rich nation and receive starvation wages.
America's opportunity to help bridge the gulf between the haves and the have-nots. And the question is whether America will do it. There's nothing new about poverty. What is new is that we now have the techniques and the resources to get rid of poverty. And the real question is whether we have the will.
At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. Now, this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check. I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure, high, and clean. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful.
What is the relationship between this and the reality of the Negro masses?
Wait. One thing we have to find out, Dr. King was talking about job and work and a high. The lie was told to black folks by 4 acres and a mule, and we didn't get there. Tonight, I'm praying that we wake up, stop the killing, save the babies. Hitler created a law and killed 6 million Jews. And some Americans are playing out of Hitler's playbook. Mass murder, the virus going on. People say, wear a mask, don't wear a mask. But I'm saying evil diseases have to leave. This is the Dr. King movement on this Labor Day. Every man need to work. Reason we so far behind, because we black folks, our ancestors, built Mississippi, Arkansas, Louisiana, Virginia. We made the South rich. And see what happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where Black Wall Street was bombed and all that happened. But we have to go a step further. Dr. King talked about Vietnam.
I was Vietnam, is Afghanistan for 20 years. And I want to explain that to you where you might know what happened. 20 years. Bush went there for 8 years. Obama was there for 8 years. And Trump was there for 2 years. So we're talking about 20 years with $6 trillion spent in another country. And we can't get all our guys out of there. And people, $6 trillion could help America get on its feet. $6 trillion. And Biden ain't the cause of it. Biden just inherited the mess. Just like Vietnam. Vietnam was a disgrace. We lost Vietnam. We lost the war in Vietnam. We lost the war in Afghanistan. And private contractors made trillions of dollars. And I want to tell you, in Detroit, Chicago, Ohio, Texas, Minnesota, we're running into the same thing. Here's General Motors, an international company. They ain't got no chips. And they had to shut some of them down. And the Republicans don't want for global warming. You see what happened in New Orleans. There's a hurricane on its way to New Orleans right now as I speak. That one coming to Florida as I speak. So back to back, and I said it last year, that you will have a hurricane back to back, storm back to back. Let me help you out. In the Midwest, we're going to have snow blizzard in the Midwest. Oh, y'all ain't listening to me. I'm prophesying. I'm trying to give you the word. But we're going to hear from Dr. King. In 2021, Afghanistan is out of Vietnam. And 911 was a hoax. They never told the truth. How is a plane going to hit a building and melt the building down? Diesel don't get that hot. It had to be a bomb or something in there. I want to know who helped them get over here. How was they able to fly planes? Who paid for them to go to school and talk by Americans?
Explicitly opposed the war in Vietnam. Additional millions cannot bring themselves around to support them. Even those millions who do support the war have confused and doubted. This reveals that millions have chosen to move beyond the prophesying of smooth patriotism to the high grounds of firm dissent based upon the mandates of conscience and the reading of history. Now, of course, one of the difficulties in speaking out today grows out of the fact there are those who are seeking to equate dissent with disloyalty. It's a dark day in our nation when high-level authorities will seek to use every method to silence dissent. Something is happening and people are not going to be silent. The truth must be told. I say that those who are seeking to make it appear that anyone who opposes the war in Vietnam is a fool or a traitor or an enemy of our soul is a person taking a stand against the best in our tradition. Yes, we must stand and we must speak. Oh, the past 2 years as I have moved to break the betrayal of my own silences and to speak from the burnings of my own heart. I have called for radical departures from the destruction of Vietnam. Many persons have questioned me about the wisdom of my past. At the heart of their concerns, this query has often loomed large and loud. Speaking about the war, Dr. King, why are you joining the voices of dissent? Peace and civil rights don't mix, they say. So this morning I speak to you on this issue, because I am determined to take the gospel seriously. I come this morning to my pulpit to make a passionate plea to my beloved nation. This sermon is not addressed to Hanoi or to the National Liberation Front. It is not addressed to China or to Russia. Nor is it an attempt to overlook the ambiguity of the total situation and the need for a collective solution to the tragedy of Vietnam. Neither is it an attempt to make North Vietnam of the National Liberation Front paragons of virtue, nor to overlook the role they must play in a successful resolution of the problem. This morning, however, I wish not to speak with Hanoi, the National Liberation Front, brother to my fellow Americans, who bear the greatest responsibility and ended a conflict that has exacted a heavy price on both continents. Now, since I am a preacher by calling, I suppose it is not surprising that I have seven major reasons for bringing Vietnam into the field of my moral vision. There is, at the outset, a very obvious and almost facile connection between the war in Vietnam and the struggle I and others have been waging in America. A few years ago, there was a shining moment in that struggle. It seemed as if there was a real promise of hope for the poor, both black and white, through the poverty program. There were experiments, hopes, and new beginnings. Then came the build-up in Vietnam. I watched the program broken as if it was some idle political plaything of a society gone mad on war. I knew that America would never invest the necessary funds or energies in rehabilitation of its poor, so long as adventures like Vietnam continued to draw men and skills and money like some demonic destructive suction to. You may not know it, my friends. It is estimated that we spend $500,000 to kill each enemy soldier, while we spend only $53 for each person classified as poor. Much of that $53 goes for salaries to people who are not poor. So I was increasingly compelled to see the war as an enemy of the poor and attack it as such. Perhaps the more tragic recognition of reality took place when it became clear to me that the war was doing far more than devastating the hopes of the poor at home. It was sending their sons and their brothers and their husbands to fight and die in extraordinarily high proportion relative to the rest of the population. We were taking the black young men who had been crippled by society, sending them 8,000 miles away to guarantee liberties in Southeast Asia, which they had not found in Southwest Georgia and East Harlem. So we have been repeatedly faced with the cruel irony, watching Negro and white boys on TV screens as they kill and die together for a nation that has been unable to seat them together in the same schoolroom. Though we watch them in brutal solidarity, burning the huts of a poor village, we realize that they would hardly live on the same block in Chicago or Atlanta. I could not be silent in the face of such cruel manipulation of the poor. My third reason moves to an even deeper level of awareness, for it grows out of my experience in the ghettos of the North over the last 3 years, especially the last 3 summers. I have walked among the desperate, rejected, and angry young men. I have told them that Molotov cocktails and rifles would not solve their problem. I have tried to offer them my deepest compassion while maintaining my conviction that social change comes most meaningfully through nonviolent action. But they ask, and rightly so, what about Vietnam? They ask if our own nation wasn't using massive doses of violence to solve its problems, bring about the changes it wants. Their questions hit home, and I knew that I could never again raise my voice against the violence of the oppressed in the ghettos without having first spoken clearly the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today, my own government, for the sake of those boys, for the sake of this government, for the sake of the hundreds of thousands trembling under our violence. I cannot be silent. Done a lot of applauding over the last few years. They've applauded our soul movement. They've applauded me. America and most of its newspapers applauded me in Montgomery. I stood before thousands of Negroes getting ready to riot when my home was bombed. Said, we can't do it this way. They applauded us in the sit-in movement. We nonviolently decided to sit in at lunch counters. They applauded us on the freedom rides when we accepted blows without retaliation. They praised us in Albany, Birmingham, and Selma, Alabama. Oh, the press was so noble in its applause, so noble in its praise when I was saying, be nonviolent toward Bull Connor. When I was saying, be nonviolent toward Jim Clark. There's something strangely inconsistent about a nation and a press that will praise you when you say, be nonviolent toward Jim Clark, but will curse and damn you when you say, be nonviolent toward little brown Vietnamese children. There's something wrong with that press. That's just the weight of such a commitment to the life and health of America were not enough. Another burden of responsibility was placed upon me. 1964. I cannot forget that the Nobel Peace Prize was not just something taking place. It was a commission. Commission to work harder than I had ever worked for Brotherhood of Man. This is a calling that takes me beyond national allegiances, but even if it were not present, I would yet have to live with the meaning of my commitment to the ministry of Jesus Christ. To me, the relationship of this ministry to the making of peace is so obvious. I sometimes marvel at those who ask me why I am fighting against the war. Could it be that they do not know that the good news was meant for all men, for communists and capitalists, for their children and ours, for black and white, for revolutionary and conservative. God has said my ministry is in obedience to the one who loved his enemies so fully that he died for them. What then can I say to the Viet Cong or to Castro or to Mayo as a faithful minister to Jesus Christ? Can I threaten them with death? Must I not share with them my life? Finally, I must be true to my conviction that I share with all men, calling to be a son of the living God. Beyond the calling of race, a nation, a creed, this vocation of sonship and brotherhood. Because I believe that the Father is deeply concerned, especially for his suffering and helpless and outcast children. I come today to speak for them. As I ponder the madness of Vietnam and search within myself for ways to understand and respond in compassion, my mind goes constantly to the people of that peninsula. I speak not now of the soldiers of the beach by, not of the military government in Saigon, but simply of the people who have been under the curse of war for almost three continuous decades now. I think of them, too, because it is clear to me there will be no meaningful solution until some attempt is made to know these people, hear their broken cry. Now, let me tell you the truth about them. They must see Americans as strange liberators. You realize that the Vietnamese people proclaim their own independence. In 1945, after a combined French and Japanese occupation, and incidentally this was before communist revolution in China, they were led by Ho Chi Minh. This is a little known fact. These people declared themselves independent in 1945. They quoted our Declaration of Independence in their document of freedom. Yet our government refused to recognize. President Truman said they were not ready for independence. So we fell victim of the nation at that time of the same deadly arrogance that has poisoned the international situation for all of these years. France then set out to reconquer its former colony. They fought 8 long, hard brutal years trying to reconquer Vietnam. You know who helped France? It was the United States of America. Came to the point that we were meeting more than 80% of the war costs. Even when France started despairing of its reckless action, we did not. For a conference was called at Geneva. Agreement was reached because France had been defeated at Dien Bien Phu. Even after that, and even after the Geneva Accord, we did not stop. We must face the sad fact that our government sought real sense to sabotage the Geneva Accord. Well, after the French were defeated, it looked as if independence and land reform would come through the Geneva Agreement. Instead, the United States came and started supporting a man named D.M., who turned out to be one of the most ruthless dictators in the history of the world, set out to silence all opposition. People were brutally murdered merely because they raised their voices against the brutal policies of Diem. Peasants watched and cringed as Diem ruthlessly rooted out all opposition. Peasants watched as all this was presided over by United States influence and then by increasing numbers of United States troops who came to help quell the insurgency that Diem's methods had aroused. When Diem was withdrawn, they may have been happy. The long line of military dictatorship seemed to offer no real change, especially in terms of their need for land and peace. Who are we supporting in Vietnam today? The man by the name of General Keith, who fought with the French against his own people, and who said on one occasion that the greatest hero of his life is Hitler. This is who we are supporting in Vietnam today. Oh, our government, the press generally won't tell us these things, but God told me to tell you this morning.
That's Dr. King was talking about the war in Vietnam back in his day. And Dr. King was assassinated because of that speech. Our war in 2021 is the war in Afghanistan. That's the first war. The second war is building the bridges. If you can spend $6 trillion over in a foreign country, why you can't spend that kind of money to build the bridges on infrastructure? Because some of the Republicans is playing out of Hitler playbook, and they love Hitler. Hitler was about killing blacks, 6 million Jews. Hitler was about white supremacy, racism. And we got some people that's in Washington doing the same thing. I'm going to say to you tonight, if you got a need to plant our seed in our ministry, this month, 9/11 happened. It happened under Bush administration. It carried on under Obama administration. And they both been going to Afghanistan to get bin Laden. Now, when bin Laden was killed, that campaign supposed to been over. But America stayed in Afghanistan, and $6 trillion, where did that go? They left tanks. They left airplanes. They just up and left. You don't leave your house. And they left everything in Afghanistan. So the people that's over there now, they got American guns. They got 400 trucks, 500 tanks, and 4 airplanes and 4 helicopters. They got probably more than that. And all kind of eminent, and taxpayer paid for it. So what I'm saying tonight, what Dr. King was talking about then, but right now, we got to deal with global warming. We got to deal with what happened in New Orleans. It's a flood. Right now, as I speak tonight, on this way is another hurricane. And the fire, a new fire just started in California. God is trying to tell us something. Tomorrow night, I'm going to talk about the handwriting on the wall and the ancestors trying to tell us where that. We study killing. We study doing things that define God. Romans 1 and 26, read that. Psalms 119, read that. And I want to tell you, God is still in the healing business. God don't change. His word is the same today, tomorrow, but we done strayed away from God. And in Matthew, St. Matthew 15 and 32, Luke, St. Luke 8, 1 and 9, he fed 5,000 women and children. probably more than that. And they all, when he came to the mountain, everybody came up. They all was healed. The blind, the crazy was healed. We're taking a virus. It might, and a lady told me this, that, and she was a doctor. She's a vision, very dangerous. They're not telling us what's in it. I don't mind taking it. I just want to know what I'm taking. Sometimes you got to ask God to show you the way. It's a loss of going on. Man have turned his back from God. If you want me, I will send you 10 commandments. Exodus 20, 23 through 17. You need to have that on your wall. If you write me, post office box 28907 Chicago, Illinois, and you see the donation, I will send you this letter, and you put it up on your wall. And when you put it up on your wall, it's a divine word. It's the divine law of God. Let me say that again. It's the divine law of God. This is Monday night, Martin Luther King movement. We're talking about, it's so much to talk about. We can jump in anywhere. The murder that's going on in Chicago, black on black. Not only in Chicago, copycats shooting on other expressways. And can't no preacher stop it. Can't nobody stop it with God. Maybe you have to understand, man have grown wicked. And you can't solve a problem with a gun. You can't solve a problem with jumping bombs. You can't solve problems killing mass number of people. But this is where we at today. 2021, and this virus is not going to get over to 2025. And there's a lot of more people got to get out of here before God do something. Revelation chapter 12, verse 7. And we are having a war. When you read Revelation 12, Michael and there was a war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought the dragon. They fought the devil. The great fight going on. And that fight, and Michael won the fight and kicked them into the earth realm. What do you think all this stuff is going on? People scared to go get bread. Little children getting shot in their home. Evil. Evil spirits. You can't march against that. You got to pray against that. You can't write a bill to make that go away. What's evil in the evil hearts of men? You got to stay, and some getting drunk, some on dope. 95,000 people died with pills. Pharmaceutical went over there, got a stand to get cocaine to put in their medicine. That's mean they stayed 20 years over there. Ain't nobody talking about that. And they ain't talking about a divine law. God said, man and woman, you can't get around that. You can't get around serving. You got to serve God. And you can't get around that. That's what you got to do. And this is our Labor Day. Now I'm going to play this, Dr. King. I always play it, but I want to play it again. Listen to what he said.
We must also realize that the problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of political and economic power.
We read one day, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But if a man doesn't have a job or an income, he has neither life nor liberty and the possibility for the pursuit of happiness. He merely exists.
Estimated that we spend $322,000 for each enemy we kill in Vietnam. while we spend in the so-called war on poverty in America only about $53 for each person classified as poor.
The promises of the Great Society have been shot down on the battlefield of Vietnam, making the poor, white and Negro, bear the heaviest burden both at the front and at home.
The other thing I want you to understand is this, that it didn't cost the nation one penny to integrate lunch counts. It didn't cost the nation one penny to guarantee the right to vote. But now we are dealing with issues that cannot be solved without the nation spending billions of dollars and undergoing a radical redistribution of economic power.
Yes.
All labor has dignity.
Yes.
But you are doing another thing. You are reminding not only Memphis, but you are reminding the nation that it is a crime for people to live in this rich nation and receive starvation wages.
America's opportunity to help bridge the gulf between the haves and the have-nots. And the question is whether America will do it. There's nothing new about poverty. What is new is that we now have the techniques and the resources to get rid of poverty. And the real question is whether we have the will.
At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they Thank you.
people Like yours.